chapter 5. I have a little word on my heart tonight. You'll have to judge whether it's of God or not. I'm thinking of casting a shadow as you pass by. Peter cast a wonderful shadow in Acts 5. Acts 5 and verse 13. And the rest durst no man join himself to them, but the people magnified them, and believers were the more added to the Lord, multitudes both of men and women, insomuch that they brought forth the sick into the streets and laid them on beds and couches, that the least the shadow of Peter passing by might overshadow some of them. There's a lovely thing said of David in Acts 13. It says he served his own generation by the will of God. Now, dear brethren, you only pass this way once. You know that. You're not going to have another chance. If you don't serve this generation, that's your last opportunity as far as service. I don't know how tall Peter was. If he's 6 foot, that's 72 inches of blessing, wasn't it? Because he cast a shadow wherever he went. And they stepped in the shadow and they were healed. And I want to apply that tonight because we're passing by and casting a shadow too. In three spheres upon my heart tonight, and that is the whole, the assembly and the world, we're casting a shadow. We touch lives, and then lives are never quite the same again, for good or evil. It's a solemn thing to live, brother. We all have an influence. I was just reading today, Joshua. He cast a shadow, didn't he? He so lived that Israel followed the Lord all the days of Joshua. And then all the days of the judges that lived after him, the new one. Talk about a power of influence. Now I want to notice first, I know it's going to be very long winded. I thought maybe I could fill a few minutes here and well, it wouldn't be time enough for a preacher. But I want to notice the influence in the whole. Whether we realize it or not, we're under attack tonight. The family home. Even the world began to say over the news the other day, they said what the problem is with the young people, the home is breaking up. Let me just say, pass by, there's one thing that's grieved me today, and that is in many homes there's no family altar. I mentioned that the other night. Brother Taylor said you have to explain to the saints what that you mean. Well, I think you know what I mean. A time when you get the little family around, whether it's morning or night, and read the scriptures and pray for them, and let them children know that you have a burden to see them saved. And that's breaking, that's going out in this rat race that we have today. My boy, when he gives his testimony, he says, the thing that touched him most. Now, you brethren might not agree with this, but my wife and I used to take turns praying in the family home that I wanted the children to know that she had the same burden as I had. First of all, to see them saved. Maybe shed a tear, weep, and plead for God. And one thing that encouraged me when the children weren't saved yet, I read one day about Lot that God sent an angel down to the backslider Lot. And he says to him, have you got any in here besides sons or daughters? Get them out of this place. Think of it. The blessed God caring enough to send a messenger down to Lot to plead with him for his family. My God is a God of families. He knows the heart of a mother tonight. I know there's burdened hearts in every gathering and burdened fathers. There's not one of you brethren ever thought you'd raise children for hell, did you? I never did. But it's time we woke up. Many of them tonight are out in the world. And before there's any birth, there's travail. Remember that, brethren. Somebody has to travail it before the Lord. It's true in the physical and it's true in the spiritual. And I don't feel the grip of it. Even our prayers tonight, brethren, we say them mechanically. Don't seem like we get hold of God today. What's the trouble? Is there any intercessors that can stand in the breach? God's about ready to wipe out Sodom. But there's one man. We read he stood yet before the Lord. That man was Abraham. And he interceded. And he had power with God. Lot didn't have much time for him. I suppose he said that square Abraham. But he could think he had an uncle like Abraham. But it says God remembered Abraham and spared Lot, don't it? Maybe you have a godly brother. When my children were young, there's old brother Fish over there in Portage. He had a long prayer list. And I figured he could get the ear of God. So I went to him one day and I said, "Brother, would you condescend to put my three on your list?" He said he would. 5 years after I met the dear old brother when he's about 90, I said, "Mr. Face, all three are in." And he wept for joy. I wonder, dear parents tonight, if you're burdened about your children, if you know a brother that can get the ear of God, ask him to pray for them. You'll never know when you get home to heaven the power of prayer. The prayers of the saints come up before God as incense. I not want to imply that I am a man of prayer. I don't pray near enough. But I believe it's only hope is to, in prayer to move the hand that moves the world to bring deliverance down. And I believe God is the same God as of old. And he can't answer. I'm reluctant to mention it, but it just comes to my mind on one time I was going with John Postma over there to Sydney Mines, and we arranged two sisters were going to meet us way out the airport at midnight. About 15 minutes or 20 minutes before we got to the airport, they said, "It's fogged in, we can't get in." So I said, "John, you and I are a long ways from Mr. Mueller, but we got the same God. We're going to get down and ask God to lift that fog." Now, believe it or not, brother, I'm not saying this because I didn't, it wasn't my faith, but I did believe that God wanted us to be there. And we prayed that God would lift the fog. And about 15 minutes, the pilot says, "The fog's lifted, we can land in Sydney." And John turned to me and says, "Man, it works, don't it?" But I just mention that because I believe that God can, if we're in doing his will, that he can work miracles even today. But this thing of prayer for the family, let me look at a verse in 2 Timothy. I don't think any of you will deny that we're living in desperate days. I thank God that I don't have to start over raising a family in such a day as this. And I don't want to give the impression that I'm up here to criticize young men, mothers and fathers, because I feel for you and I pray for you. I know if you don't have wisdom and grace from God, you'll lose them, the children that God has given you. But I would just try a few minutes to exercise and have a little burden for that little family that God gave you. Remember what Judas said, "How can I go up to my father and the lad not be not with me?" Touched my heart, and my wife was telling me, you know, that her husband passed away about 6 years ago, John McCracken. But when he was pretty near the end of the road, he come conscious. And he tried to say something. They bent down to hear. He says, Are all the children in? He was restless. They told him that all professed faith in Christ and relaxed. I want to ask you, dear father and mother, are the children in tonight? Or are they out in the world? Can you rest and be at ease? With your own flesh and blood on the way to hell? I'm afraid we've gotten used of our families divided because of him. Let us look at Timothy. 2 Timothy 1. Verse 5, Paul says, when I called to remembrance the unfeigned faith that is in thee, that dwelt first in thy grandmother Lois and thy mother Eunice, and I am persuaded that thee also. Wherefore I put thee in remembrance, thou stir up the gift of God which is in thee by the putting out of my hands. Here's two godly women. And if there wasn't a Lois and a Eunice, there wouldn't have produced a Timothy. And let me say a word of encouragement to you, dear mothers. I know the world despises it today and they want to make a career of all the women. The greatest thing you can do is raise a family for God. You read of the kings. If they're godly, the kings had a godly mother. Usually the king turned out good. The mother molds that child and puts a little of the fear of God in him. I know she can't save him, but they leave impressions. A godly mother. They taught him the scripture. How lovely it is to see a man and wife. It seemed we were noticing the other night down in Phoenix that Moses' parents were of one mind. They seen this child as a child of destiny. They raised a proper child. I think it implies even there was something special about Moses. And here's two godly couples willing to risk being arrested and all to raise a man for God. Hannah, she looked around, she seen everything going downhill spiritually. Men despising the offering because of the sons of Eli. What did she do? She got hold of her God in prayer. Give me a man to give, raise for thee, to give back to God. God honors that. And I still believe that a mother and father that are pleading for those children, God in heaven hears, and he sees your tears, and he puts them in his bottle. I would say, dear parents, if you have any tears to shed, shed them now before it's too late. There's a girl over in Brazil tonight, in jail. Been there for some years. You probably read about her. She had a godly grandmother in the Langley Assembly. That mother tried to teach that girl the way of salvation. But her son was a doctor in Langley Hospital, still is. And he come to the grandmother and says, I don't want you teaching them children. There's a hell to shun. I don't believe in that. So, well, she says, if that's your wishes, I'll have to stop. In a little while, she seen them girls are running wild. Got into a bad company. He come back, that grandmother, and said, I want to rescind that. I want you to keep at him. She says, son, you're too late. I had a burden for them children, tried to teach them the way, and you stopped me. Now they're out in the world. And that girl's over in the jail in Brazil. Had a mother, grandmother that prayed for. It's a solemn thing, isn't it, to live? It's a solemn thing to raise a family in such a day as this. I wonder if you get hold of God for them boys and girls that God give you. I believe if there's love in the home, And there's discipline. They need both. That the children will respect it. I was over in New Zealand a few years ago, and Brother John Goldley and Robert, they both had farms. And I stayed a night or so with them. But the atmosphere in that home was such that when I was leaving, I said, I want to tell you, John, it's been really a privilege to be your home and see the love and the respect you have, your brother and you and the farm and the children, one with the other. And he says, seeing you brought it up, I'm just going to tell you what happened last week. The school was down about a mile down the road, and the teacher come home on the way, and he come in to see John, and he said, John, you've got that little fella John right under your thumb. He said, the other day I was listening to him behind the door, and they were teasing your little John. They said, your dad don't love you. He won't let you go out in a lot of these sports, worldly things. You know, he don't love you. Well, the teacher was listening. The little fella straightened up. He says, you don't know my dad. My dad loves me all right, but my dad fears God. And that so impressed that teacher. He stopped in at the farm. He says, you've got that boy right under your thumb. You see, it can be done, brethren, where there's love and discipline in a home, God can honor. Now, I'm going to move on. I just wanted to, we're each one of us casting a shadow in the home. I wonder, dear saints of God, is our home a little atmosphere of heaven? Or has the world come in and the family all are gone out? That's what I want to leave with you tonight. Think it over. Is there room for the Lord in your home? We're casting a shadow in the home. God said of Abraham, should I hide my secret from him? Why? Seeing he'll raise his family after me. That's what God thinks of. And the older I get, brethren, I like the fellowship of my brethren, but first I'd like to know what God thinks. God puts great value on those that are seeking to honor God in the home. Now I want to notice another sphere. We cast in a shadow in the church today. I want you to look at 3 John. And if you don't know it, I want to remind you tonight that Satan hates God's house, God's assembly. I'm not surprised that there's conflict, strife, times. Because Satan wants to destroy anything that brings glory to Christ. And you and I are here to defend it, aren't we? We'd like to, by the grace of God. Now notice just 2 men. For I think sometimes, brethren, you could get the truth if you have an illustration. And John gives us 2 men in the 3rd epistle. One is Gaius and the other is Diocles. Someone says tonight, well, if I only was in a good assembly and everything was going fine, I could go on for God. Well, I want to show you here's a man and everything's against him. Gaius. His health is breaking. John says here, look at it. The elder unto the well-beloved Gaius, whom I love in the truth, behold, I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health, even as thy soul prospers. For I greatly rejoice when the brethren came and testified to the truth that is in thee, even as thou walkest in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that thy children walk in truth. Beloved, thou doest faithfully whatsoever thou doest to the brethren and to strangers. That was some testimony, wasn't it, to Gaius, which have borne witness of the charity or love before the church, whom if thou bring forward on their journey after a godly sort, thou shalt do well. So on. Look at verse 9. Here's the other. There's a shadow of good. Yes. Under trying circumstances. Impossible, I'd say. A Diocles in the saddle. Here's a Gaius going on in fellowship with his God and prospering in soul and helping on the work of the gospel. So it can be done, brother. But here's a Diocles. Let's take a look at him. Verse 9. I wrote unto the church, but Diocles, who loveth to have the preeminence, That's something that's only due the Lord, that in all things he may have the preeminence. Here's a man that wants it. Among them receiveth us not. He wouldn't even receive the beloved John. That's amazing, isn't it? That early in the church. Wherefore I come, I will remember his deeds which he doeth, prating against us with malicious words, and not content therewith, neither doth he himself receive the brethren, forbidding them that would, and casting them out of the church. Beloved, follow not that which is evil, but that which is good. He that doeth good is of God. He that doeth evil hath not seen God. I don't know if the man was even saved or not. I'll leave that with the Lord. He sure didn't show much, did he? He was doing evil. He was casting an evil shadow in the church. Wouldn't you like, brother, when your little day is done, and I know I haven't got too many left, have the brethren thank God that you ever crossed their path? You know, I was in there the other day and seen Ivan Grouthouse when he's dying. He says, Matt, promise me one thing, that you'll go down and see that insurance man. I think I led him to Christ. I want you to talk to him. So I promised him I would, and I went back downtown. That man called me. I said, I come over here because Ivan asked me to. He said that he thought maybe you got in the door. The man says, come back here. He took me in the back room. He broke down and wept. He says, to think of that man dying with cancer and had a love for my soul come out here and want and wooed me to the Savior. Man, I could only weep with him. And Ivan was dying on the last one. I left Minneapolis throughout that day. He died that same day. I got to see him twice. Well, I thought, I went back to Ivan. I says, Ivan, you're not going to be here long, but thank God you've got a man that's rejoicing today because you brought the message of life to him. He's praising God that you ever come near, cared for him, and died in yourself in pain, and had a love for his soul. You know, but it's a real thing. The more I see it, I was thrilled to be able to go back and tell Ivan that he was really a witnessing and a trophy of grace. Saddest thing that I've seen in my 70 some years is men that have went on for God for years and went on the rocks just inside of the shore, nearly whole. I pray, Lord, that the Lord preserve us from that. Fisher Hunter and I was walking around the block one night, and he says, Matt, do you ever think that God left you alone to test if you could be down in the gutter there? It's a humbling thing, isn't it? God left Hezekiah one time to prove him a good man. My brother has mentioned that verse, and I often think of prone to wander, Lord, I feel it. Brethren, you're never safe until the journey's end. You need grace daily. Let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. We don't seem to have that fear, that godly reverence today, to walk softly in such a day. There's pitfalls on every side. It's a miracle to look over the saints and see some that went on for God here for 30, 40, 50 years. What is it? Kept by the power of God. To him be the praise. But this man, Diophras, what a story beyond record in the book of a man that wanted the preeminence, the place that the Lord alone should have. May God keep us humble. Pride's an awful thing. There's something in all of us. You know, you can hardly talk without saying I. Children used to play that game around the table. You know how long you can talk without saying I. You can't go very long, brother. Most of our life is like the man said, he was a good preacher, but his eyes were too close together. It's something about us, in all of us, certain amount of this self-pride lifting up. I often think about Barnabas. The hardest thing that you can tell is play the second fiddle well. But Barnabas was willing to do that. He went up got Paul and brought him down to Antioch. He says, I can't go any further. The only thing that matters is the saints need to be fed. And he knew he'd have to play second fiddle. But he brought Paul down. Barnabas could appreciate the gift of his brethren. And they're building. Nice to see that in a brother, isn't it? Some can't. But here's a man, Diotrephes. He cast a shadow of evil. But Gaius is a lovely character. I don't know if he got an ulcer from Diotrephes or not. Bible don't say so. Sometimes I wonder if he didn't. Maybe that was his problem. We got a doctor here. He'd know more about it. But they claim tension can kill you. And the man, in spite of his health condition, he's prospered in soul. He's active in the gospel. Somebody's making a disturbance, brother. You get busy and serve the Lord. Forget it. Leave the brethren to carry the troubles. Many a man has been stumbled and turned aside because he got occupied with all the problems when God had raised up government to do that. If you're a young Christian, keep at the gospel like Gaius here. It's a good example, isn't it? You say, how could he go on? He loved his master. And he went on to serve God. I see my time's gone. Casting a shadow in God's assembly. I'm sure some of you brethren could develop this because there's a desperate need for it. Testimonies are weak today. Remember, we needed to pray that God would raise up men with a shepherd heart to feed the flock for which Christ has bled. It's today. I read a letter the other day that touched me. It said, we're not asking for preachers in the gospel anymore out here. We're asking God to raise up shepherds to feed them. We're losing them. Are you exercised that there's food for God's people? Are you holding them by their teeth, as it were? Or is your assembly a barren place, no food? The other day, a man from elder from the church in Linden says to me, you know, my preacher's all upset because this Charles Stanley, I don't know if you ever hear him or not, he's on the radio, he's an old Baptist, but he gives the gospel clear, and he says they're staying home and listen to Charles Stanley instead of come to church. And I said, did you ever think that maybe they might be hungry? Isn't there an answer? Why are they going out to hear him? They're going where the food is. And rather be sure there's food for God's people in the assembly. You won't hold them with a lot of trash and fun, but hold some words to feed and build up God's people. The last one I want to notice is in the world. Just look at one verse. Genesis 23. I want to show you here what those heathen thought of Abraham. Genesis 23 and verse 1. Sarah was 107 and 20 years old. These were the years of the life of Sarah. Sarah died in Kirjath-Arba, but the same as in Hebron in the land of Canaan. And Abraham came to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. And Abraham stood up from before his dead and spake unto the sons of Heth, saying, I am a stranger and a sojourner with you. Give me a possession of a burying place with you that I may bury my dead out of my sight. The children of Heth answered Abram, saying to him, Hear, my lord, thou art a mighty prince amongst us. In the choice of our sepulchres, bury thy dead. None of us shall withhold from thee a sepulchre, but thou mayest bury thy dead. And Abram stood up and bowed himself to the people of the land, even to the children of Heth. So on. A mighty prince among them. I wonder, dear brother, what kind of a shadow you're casting in your neighborhood. I was thrilled a while back when I was going up to a conference years ago up in Mervyn. And there's a strike on, the buses weren't running. I had to hire the mayor of the town to have the taxi service to take me up about 60 miles. And he says, "It's Mr. Cousin, the mayor." He says, "Who do you know of a vermin?" I said, "I know Clifford Cox. He's one of the elders of Vancouver. Some of you better remember him." He says, "Are you a friend of Clifford Cox?" I said, "Yes." He says, "You're a friend of mine." He says, "I want to tell you something about this man wasn't saved." He says, "I want to tell you something about that man. He has a John Deere agency, but he says if he had an opportunity to sell a tractor Wednesday night, prayer meeting night, he'd say, 'You've got to wait till tomorrow. I got an appointment with the Lord.' That's the kind of a man he is." And he went on, he stole. I said, "Mr. Cousin, you don't know how it thrills me to hear you speak of one of my brethren in such a manner. But there's a man you see that lived Christ before them. Cast a shadow in the neighborhood. They all knew where he stood. Maybe they didn't agree with him, but they respected him. Brethren, we're casting a shadow as we pass by. Only once. We're not going to go this way twice." There's times of discouragement today. Brethren falling out of the race, and we see very few recovered. That's what alarms me. I wonder what kind of influence we're having where God has put us. You in your small corner, and I in mine. May the Lord, that we might remember, whether it's in the home, God, Satan's attacked in our homes, no question, or in the assembly, Satan hates it, and we love it, or in the world, is hastening on to hell, he's put some lights here and there to witness for him in this dark world, to cast a shadow as we pass by. May the Lord be exercise our hearts to honor him in the day of retention. I think the darker the night, the more the reward for those who are true, faithful to him, such a day as this. May the Lord bless his words.